Welcome to The Good Life. I'm Hannah Viva. Tonight we continue exploring more of the issues facing the Mandaeans, one of our youngest Australian communities. They're the last unbroken line of Gnostics, and in this program we'll be discussing what Gnosis is and how Mandaeans differ from other Gnostics in their search for the good life. We also take a look at the Mandaean situation in Australia. Whilst some Mandaeans migrated here, others eventually received humanitarian visas, and many who couldn't afford to face the escalating violence arrived on boats. However, our detention centres often became microcosms of the environments they were trying to escape. Interfaith conflict resurfaced, and Mandaeans found themselves confronting the same historic discriminations they were fleeing in their homelands. Since the fall of Saddam Hussein's regime, Iraqi minorities such as Christians have been targeted by Islamic militants and subject to forced conversions, rapes and murders. The Mandaeans are a considerably smaller Iraqi minority, numbering just 75,000 people worldwide, with 5,000 in Sydney. I spoke with Esba Melhem, a counsellor at the New South Wales Service for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture and Trauma Survivors.
During the Saddam Hussein regime, regardless of the atrocity of that person, that dictatorship, he was the one who actually protected the Mandaean community from being persecuted by the general population. After the war, that protection has gone. And one of the Shia religious leader, his name Muqtada Sadr, declared a fatwa saying that in that fatwa, taking off the protection of the Mandaean in Iraq, because according to his learning and to his understanding, they are different than those Mandaean who are mentioned in the Quran. Because in the Quran, they are mentioned as the people of the book. This religious leader said, no, those, the Mandaean of Iraq today are not the same people. Therefore, they are infidel, and they are. It is the duty of any Muslim to convert them to Islam. And those who are not converted, they are subject to death. And there's a lot of kidnapping, a lot of killing of the Mandaean, a lot of atrocity happened to the Mandaean, and that's why they have to run away from Iraq. You can't imagine the population of 75,000 people leave Iraq for no reason. They left Iraq because for fear of their lives.
Esba Melhem is a counsellor working with the Mandaean community. Some of the Mandaeans may have found freedom here, but their flight to freedom has been riddled with challenges. Former Human Rights Commissioner Professor Sever Zdalski says our continuing failure to acknowledge interfaith conflict in our detention centres has led to continued persecution of Mandaeans on Australian soil.
You see, basically they suffered from a double punishment because they were a religious minority in a detention centre. The vast majority of people in large detention centres in Australia were of Islamic religion. Mandaeans are of different religion. There is an ancient religion which believes very much into St. John. And basically what was happening, they were discriminated by all other inmates. They were quite often regarded as unclean, as unable to meet with other Muslims. They were ostracized. There were cases of harassment. There was a case of alleged rape. They simply didn't have the standing in the community in detention.
What do you think the Australian government should have done about that interfaith conflict in detention centres?
The bottom line is, you see, they came from in Iraq and Iran, where they were clearly refugees. For example, the Iraqi Islamic Mahajins, a militant group over there, demanded that all Mandaeans either convert to Islam or leave the country or be killed. So the official policies, both in Iraq and Iran, and the general population feeling was extremely discriminatory. Therefore, they were running and asking for protection. From my personal point of view, they should be kept separately from Islamic detainees. The number was very small because in the year 2000-2001 there was only about 160 of them who arrived, and the following year I think it was less than 100. So, and then basically their migration stopped, so we are talking about very small numbers. And on the evidence we've got to the inquiry, some of children spent more than 2 years in the immigration detention. From my point of view, and most of them got a refugee status, so from my point of view, they should be separately, and preferably they should be kept in different conditions, possibly in housing detention.
There are still a few Mandaeans in detention, I believe. Do you think that, that situation should be being addressed at the moment?
I think very much so. I really do believe that they should be given priority in processing because they do not suffer only because of the fact that they are in detention, but also because that they are very significant minority in the detention, and that the majority of people who are in the detention of Islamic background regards them as inferior, as people who should be harassed and punished.
Professor Sevastowski, former Human Rights Commissioner. He believes Mandaeans currently in detention should be given the option of separate accommodation in order to prevent further abuse. So just what is our government doing to address interfaith conflict in our detention centres? The official line seems to be that it's a good opportunity to teach other inmates how to live in an egalitarian manner. Sandy Logan, spokesman for the Department of Immigration.
Let's remember that immigration detention in Australia is both about detaining people who do not have a lawful right until it's so established that they do, if they do, to remain in Australia. But it's also an opportunity for people who do believe they have a strong claim to remain in Australia to begin to live with Australian values and to live under Australian norms. And this means that where there is interfaith conflict, that it is resolved in a peaceful and amicable way. That is certainly the training that our staff have. It is certainly the training we've equipped them to deal with potential interfaith conflicts that may arise in detention. But as I say, these are quite rare. They are not common in immigration detention.
Sandy Logan of the Department of Immigration. So whilst human rights organisations like Amnesty were reporting cases of Mandaeans being locked out of shower blocks, forbidden to eat at the same tables as other inmates, and one case of severe sexual harassment, detention centre staff were instilling Australian values into our humanitarian applicants, teaching them to resolve things in an amicable way. However, that wasn't the only challenge facing Mandaean refugees. Those who came by boat experienced anything from 6 months to a couple of years in our detention centres. The former Human Rights Commissioner states that Australia should have processed them more rapidly. He says an extended period in detention jeopardises the way refugees eventually settle into Australian society.
It makes very difficult for them to settle in broader community, and especially long period of detention, and long period of detention which is inappropriate, which is in crowded condition, without access to learning English language, without access for children to schooling, without access to proper medical health services and so on, is very damaging.
In your opinion, is 6 months in detention a violation of human rights?
It's very much so, and especially when you look at the children, it's clearly against international convention dealing with the rights of the child.
Former Human Rights Commissioner Professor Sevastowski there, and he claims an extended period in detention has led to increased psychological difficulties for all those Mandaeans who are finally granted humanitarian visas. If time spent in detention is difficult, and being a mundane makes it even more difficult, what is it about their religion that makes them cling to it? Well, for Mandaeans, gnosis is the key to leading a good life. So what is gnosis? I spoke to Professor Gary Trumpf from the University of Sydney's Religion Department.
Well, gnosis is a deeper form of knowledge. You have to appreciate the spiritual implication it has when you come across it in ancient writings. So it's made famous by the Gnostic movement, just especially after the time of Jesus, but in some cases a little bit before, and also in the Hermetic writings, which come from around about the 2nd century CE or AD. And a whole collection of these writings gives the impression that true knowledge of the spiritual beings which govern the universe will provide a salvation back to the true source of the human being in the heavenly home.
The good life for a Gnostic is all about the notion of return. Gnostics believe they themselves are sparks of the divine, and that knowledge about the heavenly realms is the path back to the heavenly realms. However, Mandaean Gnostics differ from Christian ones in that Jesus plays no redemptive role. Whilst the angel Gabriel is seen as their redeemer, John the Baptist is their last prophet.
Mandaeans, they're reacting against Christ. They have no cosmic Christ figure coming down from the heavens to give advice, because that's a salient feature of Christian Gnostic systems. But their understanding, a kind of substitute Jesus figure would be Hebelzewa, whom you would translate as Gabriel.
While there are some similarities between Mandaean beliefs and those of the ancient Persians or Zoroastrians, Mandaean beliefs are ultimately Semitic, whereas the ancient Persian language and belief system was more closely related to those of the ancient Greeks.
In the case of Mandaism, they have preserved a very strongly Semitic outlook on Gnosticism. Their language is a form of Aramaic, and it's not Indo-European or Coptic Egyptian, as in the case of like the Greek texts and the Coptic texts from Egypt that reflect the greater number of treatises we have from the Gnostic world. When you look at Zoroastrianism over in Persia before the coming of Islam, it is a strongly Indo-European grouping. You know, in terms of religion, there are some interesting commonalities. Zoroastrianism is known for strong dualism. The forces of light are combating the forces of darkness.
So who were the Mandaeans originally? The Mandaeans believe they have a lineage dating back to the days of Adam. The view of Professor Gary Trumpf is that they were probably a breakaway Jewish sect who ended up following John rather than Jesus.
We have Mandaean texts of very intriguing and mysterious kinds, with their own orthography and manner of writing, and especially their own manner of pictography, because they're the great stick figure artists of the ancient world. The scholarly consensus tends to put the group in the Jordanian Valley area as more likely Jewish than not.
So as John the Baptist is the true leader of the Mandaean people, baptism is the central ritual of their religion. Whilst in Christian traditions baptism only occurs once, the Mandaeans baptize on a continual basis. Christianity holds baptism as a formal welcome into the faith and a purification from original sin. In the Mandaean view, it's seen as an ascent to the heavens.
They have lots of traditions about Adam. They have traditions about his son Seth. The more of a hint of their knowledge of biblical materials after that, but you jump to John the Baptist, which is the kind of characteristic telescoping of events in the mythicizing mentality of Gnostic groups. They don't go in for all the historical details. Mandaeans see this baptismal act as their means of linking with the divine and constantly maintaining that link.
Mandaeans have survived persecution and discrimination for thousands of years. They've secluded themselves from other Middle Eastern populations, only marrying within their faith, and with no conversion rites for those wishing to join the religion. Only a select few are initiated into their highest mysteries, and they believe this inner cadre has the power to leap between dimensions and transcend the physical universe. Rabbi Brikken Asoreya, head of the Mandaean Supreme Council in Australia.
When Mandaean meditate, they usually experience getting in touch into other parts of the universe, because part of our teachings, we believe that life exists not only on planet Earth, but as well as they exist in other places in the universe. There are secret techniques that we use to go beyond time and space, time zero we call it, to jump when you meditate beyond the three dimensions. The first stage in the Mandaean meditation is to go to the fourth dimension, which is time zero. In Mandaeism, we know 61 dimensions that we can act into. This is part of the tradition. That's why Mandaean love very much this religion and this tradition.
In Rabbi Brikken Asoreya's opinion, it's the experience of gnosis which has kept their religion alive for over two millennia. But Esba Melhem from the New South Wales Service for Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture and Trauma Survivors says that what the Mandaeans are experiencing, both in their country of origin and in their new country, is threatening the viability of the community.
Even after a long time of being in Australia, 2-3 years or maybe more, the post-traumatic stress symptoms still exist, anxiety still exists, depression still exists, anger still exists, and most of them have these symptoms. But because of their necessity to deal with everyday life, they cover it up, but it does affect their ability for settlement, to settle properly, and their ability to socialize. They can't get employed, they can't do further study, they can't live the way they want. They feel that their trauma hasn't finished. They feel as torn apart. If the one member of the family here and a few members of a different country, it's a great loss.
Many Mandaeans have found freedom in Australia, but in many ways also, their journey has just begun. I'm Hannah Viva. Thanks for joining me on The Good Life.